A sex party with Dustin Rybka special presentation.
Sex party with Dustin Rybka.
Hello and welcome to Body Count, the 2023
sex party Halloween
special. Listen, right off the bat, I gotta tell you, this year's Halloween special is
far more intense
than last year's Halloween special. We've got three big conversations. They deal with
necrophilia,
which is the sexual attraction to dead bodies or having sex with a dead body.
Yeah, we go there.
And we also talk a lot about serial killers. What makes a serial killer? Are you born with it? Is it in the genes or is it something learned?
Is it a bit of both?
We also are going to chat about which one of your favorite horror icons is the horniest, costume etiquette, and so much more. So let's get you to one of the most fascinating conversations I've ever had on this podcast with
Dr. Victoria Hartman.
This is about necrophilia and serial killers. So without further ado, please enjoy my
grave robbing
conversation with Dr. Victoria Hartman.
Happy Halloween.
Dr. Victoria Hartman, welcome. Well, first of all, happy Halloween.
Same.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Sex Party 2023 Halloween special. Listen, I say this all the time, and I mean it all the time. And I just told you a little bit off camera, right? Or off recording, whatever we call that, off book.
Yeah, I usually say off camera.
Yeah, that I wanted you on the show for a long time because you have this insane, all-encompassing knowledge of sex and everything that comes with it. I know that because I've been stalking your Instagram. We have a mutual friend. But for the people who don't know who you are, they've never heard your voice, they've never seen your face. Can you talk a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I kind of look back now and I look at my own life and go, how'd you do that? So back in the 90s, I actually got into the horror film business originally as a B-movie scream queen and then went into production. And while I was doing that, I was pursuing my advanced education and so forth, and then got two doctorates over the course of a few years in clinical sexology and sexological forensics. And did my internship actually at the Erotic Heritage Museum, and the owner of the museum, the museum's a for-profit museum, asked me if I wanted to be the director. And I went, actually didn't ask me. I got a call from the corporate office and said, hey, go pick up your keys. He's decided you're the executive director. So I said, oh, okay. And that's where I've been ever since 2014 as the director. So it's been almost 10 years now. I've been there a total, I think, of 13 or 14 years, but 10 as the director. And started a podcast, but my area of study was necrophilia. I had been fascinated by aberrant sexual behaviors from my undergrad work and just kind of followed where I almost veered off to another paraphilia, but then stuck with necrophilia and wanted to be that person that was on Time Magazine who could actually find the necrophiliacs before they, you know, killed somebody. And well, the great thing about science is you're usually wrong. So it maintains the mystery of continued research, which I continue to do to this day. But that's basically, I'm a former scream queen who went into necrophilia studies as a professional, and now I do forensic work and I run the museum.
I mean,
I have a weird life. I've had a weird life. No,
but I think that's so perfect, right? Like, I couldn't have picked a better guest to have with me on the Halloween special because, okay, so B-movie scream queen, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. What was that like? And like, how much sexual energy, sexuality influenced the writing and the acting of being a B? Because I mean, I know some of those movies and they're like really campy, classic, amazing kind of things. But like that right there, there's a definite through line from B movie, even though there doesn't seem like there would be B movie Scream Queen to necrophiliac studies to the erotic heritage museum, you know, director. There's definitely a line there. So let's start at the beginning. Like, what was that like being a B movie Scream Queen?
Well, you know, it actually happened by accident. I was a cam girl back in my early 20s, and someone contacted me and said, "Hey, I'd love for you to be in my movies." And I went, and I, you know, I'm a kid of the 80s, so I grew up on Freddy Krueger and Jason and all that. And part of my, actually most of my youth until my late teens, I was, I'm German, and I grew up in Germany. And Germany at the time was, you know, the Cold War was a big thing. And so we were, you know, that hanging, death constantly hanging over your head and going to like movies like the day after as a homework assignment and going to the remnants of the extermination camps as a teenager and as a young person. Death was always sort of omnipresent growing up, and then came to the States and was exposed to the 80s horror genre. And so death was, I don't know, death, you know, always seemed to hang over my head. And someone contacted me when I was a cam girl, and I said, sure. And why not? I love horror movies, whatever. And then my boyfriend at the time, the male talent that day, he bowed out. And so I asked my boyfriend, and I said, who later became my husband, I said, you want to be the bad guy? And he used to be able to do this Jack Nicholson thing with his face. And he was like, sure. So we showed up together to do this shoot and had a great time. And he was sort of my part. We ended up getting married and doing our own productions and stuff like that later on. And being that it's B movies, it was, these were TNA B movies, so boobs and butts were always just a part of that. And I was really comfortable because my partner was my bad guy who I did the performances with, although it was never Triple X, it was definitely softcore. And you know, sexuality was just a part of those, you know, Freddy Krueger's a classic example. That first one was all about teen sex and all that, and they all get murdered for being bad teens. Then sexuality sort of interwoven with all of the horror, and that was kind of what these movies were like. They were just more underground than, say, mainstream releases like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. And sex was just interwoven with horror and violence. And that's what I did for 20 years, you know, eventually going behind the camera, because I really loved writing the scripts because of the psychology and how the psychology and sexuality were still interwoven. You could tell some really interesting, dark stories, but in a way that was safe to tell. And that's what I did. And that's what put me through school and helped me raise my kids. You know, I have my kids now are in their mid 30s, and it was just a great time. I actually miss it sometimes, you know. It ended up not being lucrative anymore, but because there's so much competition, but it was just it was more about the fun than the money, you know. It made it so that I could give my kids a good upbringing and stuff, but it was just a lot of fun, and it gave me access to the people that I later on went on to study.
No, that's what an incredible, just that piece alone, like what an incredible, fascinating story, right? And I want to ask you, having done all that now, do you think that we've lost sex in particular in horror movies, right? Like, it doesn't seem, whether it's like softcore or B or like whatever, even some of the stuff that's like available online, that's not in theaters, but also the stuff in theaters, it seems like, you know, and I was an 80s kid, 90s, whatever, for a while, growing up, and, you know, obsessed with The Final Girl and Freddy Krueger and Jason and all of that stuff, sneaking into places and movies became, you know, part of my life. And so I just feel like personally as just a pop culture, you know, fanatic, like you don't see tits and ass. You don't see the hardcore chase sequence where it's very sexual, right? Mm-hmm. So what are your feelings on that? And why did it go away, do you think?
Well, I mean, I want to not negate some of the, you know, younger generation's reasons for not really pursuing those lines of storytelling anymore. That being said, I think there's these narratives out there that I, like I said, I don't want to completely discount because I'm from a different generation. Having said that, I think it falls in the same realm as in the discussions people are having around adult material now. You know, there seem to be these narratives both in both extreme sides of the political spectrum that, you know, these are exploitive and they are, there could be trafficking and so forth. A lot of the research that's been out there that's done by my colleagues is not really finding that. It could be out of, you know, we're not seeing that kind of production anymore because of fear of repercussions or what have you. I mean, when I talk to people privately, some still reach out to me and go, gosh, I wish you were still making movies. We always had so much fun. It was a way for, at the time, it was just a way to explore dark themes. And I think while we might have gotten away from that, I don't, creatively, I don't see a problem with doing films that include sex and violence. When I talk to people who are, you know, when I have an idea like, you know, maybe I'll just do something because it's fun. And I reach out to different people, photographers, filmographers, set designers, and so forth, and go, look, I have this really effed up idea for a short film. Every single person is like, dude, I would love to do that. Just don't put my name on it because I don't want to lose my mainstream work. But if this is just like for a private collector or a creative effort that you want to do, or they don't even want me to pay them for it. They're just like, it would just be real. That's such a great idea. And I'm just like, you know, I think people are afraid of social repercussions for exploring these dark themes. And at the same time, we're seeing this huge resurgence of goth culture and, you know, things like Gothic Home and Garden and Talk Death. And there's all kinds of oddities shops popping up that, you know, then have the word cemetery in them or spooks or something like that. I think people are trying to find a way to indulge in those realms and also express themselves there, but not give the appearance that they are, or have it be like, oh, it's wrapped up in comic culture or comic book culture or whatever. But you know, people know me as Dr. Death. And so they tell me where they're really at. And it's not that uncommon to, I just was on another podcast where, you know, the host was like, no, I hear this all the time that people are really eager to explore these spaces just in a safe way. Even in the BDSM community, you have organizations like Tashra who are trying to do academic research on like extreme scenes and, you know, people engaging in extreme scenes in a safe way. So I don't think our impetus and our drive to want to explore these things has gone away. It's just we're less likely to admit that to one another for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, that's incredibly interesting. And I think, you know, if you, from my perspective, right, not a doctor at all whatsoever. My initials are DR, but like that's about as close as we'll ever get. You know, it does seem that we are exploring some of these darker themes. And, you know, like if you go and look at TikTok and Instagram right now, even when it's not spooky season, right, you have like the scream guy like lifting up the half naked girl's head and like taking a picture. It's like this horny thing that everyone's doing. Mm-hmm. Halloween has become this multi quadrillion thing, you know, like where it's like we need to start. People are like the crazy people start celebrating Halloween in July. And so like that's a thing. Cosplay is bigger. And I would even argue like some of this horror stuff migrated, B movie stuff migrated over to Pornhub and whatever. So you're right. It has sort of gone back underground.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's starting to, like, you
it's
know,
it's like underground, maybe, not underground. It's in this weird, like, in between place.
Yeah. It's starting to ooze from the sewers, like in Ghostbusters 2. It's starting to bubble. It's above pretty. There'll be baby carriages flying around in the streets soon. hopefully. Okay. And so do you have plans to do another, like, you know, horny, violent, B movie, like, at any time in the future? Or is it just sort of like something that you hope happens?
Well, I would have to say I'm talking to a few different people about doing a private project. And everyone's super excited about it. It's just a matter of timing. Like, we're all very busy in our mainstream lives and so forth. And it would take, you know, I would probably say, considering the kind of shoot we want to do, it's like, it would take a week. And, well, we're busy, you know, I mean, after the pandemic sort of ebbed away, even though, of course, the illness is still out there, but it's, you know, we don't have lockdowns and so forth anymore. Our lives kind of came to a standstill for a year or two. And now I know this last year is just, I've felt like I've been going at a million miles an hour playing catch up. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a matter of finding the time to do it, you know, because we're catching up from the world slowing down for a couple of years. So we'll see. Some people have just been like, hey, you know, I can't wait around for this. I got to move on. And some are just like, hey, when are we going to do this? So it's a matter of timing, since it's a creative project. I don't know. I've got so many responsibilities to the museum, and I'm writing two books, and I'm, you know, on a lot of podcasts lately, and I've kind of gone back into modeling a little bit. So it's a busy time. So the answer is yes, and I don't know when.
the best answer of creative.
And plus, like, when I do films, I do dark, 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 extremely dark films, and they're very sexual. And having that not be something that would be available commercially, you know, means that it's something that I have to fit in the rest of the time, and everybody else does too. But everyone that I've to, they're like, we have to do that. So we'll see.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question is, you know, give us a taste, right? Give the audience and myself a Halloween taste of, like, exactly how dark and how sexual your films are. What kind of themes are you exploring? Why is that important? Is it just to just go over the top and present ideas? I want to hear it all.
Well, the particular film that you know, I'm considering doing with some colleagues is, it's an exploration of, really, at the end of the day, it's an exploration of the dichotomy between really pursuing one's sexual tastes and desires and what the consequences are of that. And how we can be, you know, how we are, well, some of us, I've had a very crazy sex life. So growing up in German culture, shame is not a part of what, you know, coming of age and so forth. Shame, I know over here in the United States, there's a lot of shame around sexuality. And, you know, a lot of my ex-lovers and partners and stuff really struggle. I never struggled with shame. I just was like, oh, it's something, you know, and I root that in my German upbringing. There was just nothing, as long as everyone was consenting and participating, there was, shame was kind of, you know, pointless. And, so, you know, when I have a new lover tell me, oh, I'm really into this, and they're waiting for my reaction, and I go, yeah, when are we going to do it together? You know, and they just kind of look at me, especially if it's a heterosexual man, especially then, and they, like, just look at me like, what? And I'm like, are we going to do that? Are we going to do that? And they're like, oh, blah, blah, and they short circuit. So I think, you know, the theme for this particular short film is around losing yourself in every desire you have and dealing with shame and consequences and what that might look like. So that's all I'm going to reveal right now.
Okay.
But it's okay. Very, very, you know, there's like a devil in there, like a, and female zombies and, you know, a lot of like graphic violence and so forth. And, with a very strong sexual theme, but like I said, don't want to give away too much. The underlying exploration is sexual shame.
Well, we
desire
love
a good, and sexual shame.
Yeah. And we love a good tease on the show.
I don't know when we're going to do it.
is there zombie sex in the script? That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Then that's all I need to know. You know, you sold a ticket for me in whatever private place I need to sneak into to see it. You also mentioned that people call you Dr. Death, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
So, okay, why do people – I love this. I love this so much. Why do people call you Dr. Death?
Well, primarily because, you know, I've got this background in horror movies before my academic career. Well, during and after my – before my academic career, but also because that's what I study. I study necrophilia as an academic pursuit. I've written a book on necrophilia, especially people who have death fetishes. And I'm writing two more books right now on murderers and sort of the sexual themes that go along with their crimes and other aspects of their psychology. So, you know, I've, you know, proposed not necessarily a classification system of necrophilia, but one with a co-author that's much more descriptive and has more detail to it than, say, what's being used in criminological communities and in criminal justice. So that's just kind of what I do. And plus I'm goth. So all those things got people come over to my house and they're like, wow, you really are this. I'm like, yep. Yeah. I've got skulls and other things everywhere, you know, and everything's painted black, you know? So like, no, this, what you see is what you get. So
yeah. But like, what a cool name, doctor. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better code name.
My boss calls me, you know, he walks in the door and he goes, where's the pervert? I go, okay.
Well, that one's good too.
I just laugh. I go, sure. Yeah. Okay.
So what I want to do is I would love to just for like, you know, the noobs out there, or maybe just like people who don't know what necrophilia is. Can you define, because everybody has the definition, but then their own sort of intimate definition of all sorts of terms. And I do this with sexual terms all the time on the show, but from you, Dr. Death, what is necrophilia?
Quite simply, necrophilia is, necro, of course, is death, and then philia is love. And that's essentially what it translates to, a love of death. And how that manifests sexually is people who are labeled with necrophilia are those who generally either fetishize death sexually, or they've actually engaged in sex with the dead. Necrophilia doesn't include murder or anything like that. Necrophilia is simply sex with the dead or love of the dead. There are other words for murder and stuff like that.
Sure, sure. How common is necrophilia? Like if we were to look at a map of the United States, right?
We don't know. We really don't know. You know, the group that I studied were over 50,000 strong. Now that's not saying 50,000 participated in the actual research. It was just, I had about access to around over 50,000 people. But at the end of the day, we don't know because it's so taboo. And you can be fined for it. You can go to jail for it. There are all kinds of laws on the books and the social stigma is just enormous. So, you know, we don't know.
Yeah.
People like me, you know, the rare folks who are researching it, we hear stories all the time, but they're generally were either sworn to secrecy or of which, of course, we would, you know, we wouldn't out anyone who admitted to these things. But we get, we get a lot of anonymous tales that people tell us these things that they've done, and there's no way of verifying it. So we really don't know. I don't know that we'll ever get an accurate count on it. I don't know.
And for people that are experiencing that, right? Like, how are they playing that out? Because I've heard, and I know this is it's like a kind of all over the place question, like kind of a difficult question to answer because the data is not there. You're sworn to secrecy, just like you just said. But, you know, I've heard stories about people who have a partner play dead. The role play stuff and whatever. But I mean, if someone has a love, of death and is turned on and is horny by death or the idea, the concept of having sex with the dead body. I mean, are they just masturbating to Insane Clown Posse? Are they hopping the fence and going into, which little high school Dustin was, had a clown makeup and went to a ICP concert. So we're just putting that out there. But are they romanticizing that sort of stuff? And it's like, what kind of dipping their toe into that? Are they sneaking into cemeteries? Are they getting jobs, you know, where they have access to bodies that are like, what, how are they playing all of this out?
Yes, yes, and yes.
So they're okay. They're listening to ICP in their phone while they're in a cemetery digging up a body. Okay.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, because even the news doesn't report on it the way that you wish that they would, right? Like you hear the one-off tale. Like I remember, you know, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, which is 40 minutes south of Detroit. Bit of a grimy place, right? But home is home. And so there was like some funeral home where there was some shit happening, and it was like amongst so many people that they couldn't ignore it, so they had to report on it. But it was like as cookie cutter as you can be with someone having sex with dead bodies.
You're from Detroit?
Well, 40 minutes south of Detroit. Okay, so, yeah.
I actually really love Detroit.
Me too.
It's one of my favorite places. They have the best pizza place there ever. But most of the time when you hear about necrophilia, you hear about it from people like Bundy or Dahmer or BTK or what, you know, it's these sensationalistic stories. The necrophilia in and of itself, you don't really hear on the news very often unless, you know, it's a hospital orderly who's had sex with like 127 corpses over the course of 20 years. Then, yeah. But you just really don't. You just don't hear about it unless it's attached to some sensationalistic serial killer or murder or something like that. Why that is, I don't know. Maybe to protect the families, you know, because ultimately there's this debate beyond, say, you know, any of the potential infections that you could get from having sex with the dead, because that's one of the reasons we wash our hands, where doctors wash their hands before surgeries, because when they'd perform operations on the dead and then they'd go help women give birth, those women would die from infections from the dead. So, so beyond that, the infectious aspect, you know, I think the reason that people struggle with it is the question that is still being asked in courts today. Well, can the dead consent? Don't know. Would they consent if they were alive to what would be happening to them after death? Don't know. Probably not, but you never know. I think more it's not reported on out of respect for the families. Mm-hmm. And because that person, even though they're deceased, still represents someone very important to them. And it's the trauma that would be the result of learning that their deceased loved one had been violated that would be problematic. And so I think maybe there's not reported on because, you know, out of one aspect might be out of respect for the families of the dead.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did come across, and this might be bullshit, but you're like the perfect person to ask about it, right? is like back in the old days where you had the grave robbers hundreds of years ago. And a lot of that was deemed like for medical research, but really they were like digging up like hot chicks they couldn't get when they were alive and like having sex with the bodies. Is that something that you've heard of?
Well, I've heard of munging.
Munging. Okay. What is that?
Well, munging is when, say the corpse of a young woman, who hasn't been dead very long, maybe less than a week, is either dug up or pulled out of a crypt or whatever. And that's basically performing oral on a dead young dead woman or dead woman. Problem is that there's usually an infestation already by that time, especially if the body is exposed to natural elements, which of course could lead to the munger's death. So, you might indulge in your kink, but you're only going to do it once because that's the only shot you're going to get. You're going to join that person pretty fast after that. So given that that is actually a thing, I would have to say that, that's not uncommon. However, you also have the opposite, which, a notorious person, her name is Karen Greenlee. She's disappeared since the 90s. She's alive somewhere, we assume, but she's changed her identity so many times. We're actually the only museum to possess an artifact of hers that includes human remains. When she was busted, she had sex with over 40 young men, deceased men, by the time she was caught. And the only reason she was caught is because she stole a hearse that contained the body of a man that she wanted. Had she not stolen that hearse, she might have never gotten found out. So it's not, she's the notorious necrophile. She's also unrepentant, but is she rare? Who knows? So it's not just, young women or young people. It could be just like sexuality. This can take many shapes and forms, even including like how the body's posed after death, and what position they're laying in or whether or not their tongue's hanging out. I mean, it really just depends on the individual.
And so this woman, mm-hmm. She had sex with 40 young male corpses, basically, yes. Or yep. Over 40. And she was caught because she stole the hearse, which I'm assuming had something to do with the funeral, right? Like, so she just took the hearse and tried to drive off with it. And that's how she was caught.
That's how she got in trouble. Yeah. Yeah. As far as I knew, she worked as a morgue assistant at a morgue, and in her time there had access to, countless male corpses. Of course, she was choosing some over others, but it was, I believe if I remember correctly, it was that same funeral home. She had not had access to that particular corpse and so stole the hearse to gain access to it, and actually did keep him for about 24, 36 hours and then returned him and was found out.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you just like wheel someone back into the morgue?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think by this point she would have been found out, because if she's gone and the hearse is gone, they're going to, even if they never find the hearse or the corpse, they're going to figure it out, who it was. So I think she just kind of went like, well, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Besides her, are there other semi-famous necrophiles that you studied that you know of?
Well, I'm getting into that now with these new books. The people that I studied in my first book were non-offending necrophiles. So in other words, they hadn't actually had access to a dead body. For them, it was a kink that they wanted to indulge with a consenting life partner. That being said, a few of them did admit that if they could have access, they would go ahead with it. Famous ones are the ones that I'm writing about. Some are very well known. Ted Bundy, of course, being a great example, Jeffrey Dahmer being a great example. There are several out there. It's just that the murders they committed were more sensationalistic than the fact, you know, it was sort of like, of course they killed them and then had sex with their corpse. They're murderers. You know what I mean? So there are plenty of famous ones out there. Not so much pure necrophiles. No, you just don't hear about them, even though they're out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that makes me really fascinated with this particular subject, right? Is it the death that's turning them on, or is it the power over someone who is dead that's turning them, or is it a little bit of both?
Well, what we found in the research was, and this seems to be pretty consistent, when there's no murder involved, when it's purely necrophilia, at least where cisgendered men are concerned, it's the that they want a non-rejecting partner. That's almost always the motivation, is having a non-rejecting partner that they can express themselves sexually with and not be shamed. With cisgendered women, we didn't really have anyone that identified as LGBT in the research. For cisgendered women, it was to be owned by someone or to belong to someone completely and have them do whatever they want. And for her to be given permission to let that happen and do anything that person wants them to sexually. So power, not nefarious power, no. It's more, again, it comes back to being able to be, at least according to the people that I've researched, being able to be sexual in a way that they don't feel that they can be with any of the partners they have that are living.
Yeah, I mean, and what? How fascinating is that? That it's literally reversed by gender. Mm-hmm. That to me just is so obvious and yet so mind blowing at the same time. Which,
right?
I think most sex is so obvious and so mind. Not even, you know, not just like necrophilia, but sex in general. I mean, and I'm sure I'll botch the quote or something, but all sex is about power, except for sex is out of whatever. See, I totally botched it. But you're right. It's not nefarious power. It's just like that ownership or the giving, taking thing. It's just that to me is so fascinating that it's totally reversed by gender.
Yeah, it was interesting. Actually, I'm talking to another researcher right now. We want to do a project together because of what I found in my I didn't explore it really, but that necrophilia in cisgendered women seems to be inverse as well as external, and we're not finding that in cisgendered men.
Okay, so let's dumb that down, right? Let's dumb that down for me. When you say inverse for women, right? What does that mean exactly?
So And they found this in the research too with I'm trying to remember. I think it's people who were into being diapered, right? They didn't. It wasn't a kink for cisgendered men to see themselves as little children in their minds. It was just, you know, being diapered and being taken care of. That was the kink. It didn't reverse onto that person and say, oh, because I want to be a baby or I envision myself as a child. Same with necrophilia. It seems like, where with cisgendered women, the inversion is I see myself as a corpse. And also I fetishize corpses, right? So that person, that cisgendered woman fetishized corpses, but also herself as a corpse. Whereas we're not seeing that inversion in cisgendered men. They fetishize corpses, but not themselves as corpses. Wow. And we're not sure why. So we want to do more research on that.
Yeah. Again, that it's even more incredible.
Right.
I look forward to
Of course, there are outliers in both, but overall, you know,
Yeah. I mean, are these people, and this is probably a dumb question, but we don't shy away from dumb questions because, hey, right?
There's no such thing as a dumb question.
Exactly. especially with sex podcasting. Is there any couples that have ever indulged in necrophilia that are known or groups, right? Because you have to ask, is there a cult of necrophiliacs somewhere? Is there any evidence to suggest that a couple would partake in something like this?
Is the potential that they're out there? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Have I found them? No.
Okay.
Yeah. Am I curious as to whether or not they exist and would like to find them? Yes. I would also love to talk to Karen Greenlee. To talk to her. I don't have to out her. I don't need to know where she's, she doesn't have to tell me where she's at or anything. I would just love to interview these folks and, just get us. I'm a consummate observer. I'm a voyeur, if you will. I'm a consummate observer of people's behavior. I'm fascinated by human beings and their behavior. Just to be able to listen. I wouldn't even have to ask questions. Just to sit across from, say, this hypothetical couple or this, underground group, or just to sit and listen would be enough. And I'd never have to talk about it at all. I would just love to listen. But so far, haven't come across it.
No. What would you ask Karen Greenlee if you, what would be the first thing you'd ask her? Or how do you envision that first couple questions?
I think I'd probably, like I said, I don't know that I would necessarily ask any questions. I think I would just say, tell me about yourself. That would be it. Tell me about yourself and what drives you on the inside.
Yeah.
That's it. That was it. Because for me, listening is so much more powerful than trying to direct the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to listen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
and I'm a trained therapist, so I've trained to listen quite well, I think. Actually, when I was an undergrad, a lot of my professors would, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, they would note that on, my either my final grades. I actually had one professor call me into her office and ask me if I wanted to be in her profession, which was communication, because I was a skilled and attuned listener. And I'm like, oh, really? So I didn't go in. That was my minor was communication. But I'm fascinated by listen. I love to listen to people, which is weird because I do a lot of the talking, but I really just love to listen to people.
Well, I think that it's such an under. I mean, there's such a mystery to that, right? Like this need to always be talking or talking over someone or inserting your ideas. But like, it really is this sort of mystic thing that I feel like a lot of people aren't using, where you can ask a question and then just sit back, or you could just like let somebody talk until they absolutely can't talk anymore. Mm-hmm. And both of those approaches I found in life, right? I wish I could shut the fuck up a little bit on my own show sometimes, right? So, I just think it's so important. I think it's so valuable. So when you say that, you would want to interview/listen to someone like that, to a Karen Greenlee or anybody, that I just think you would probably then get closer to the answers that you're seeking or that you're interested in. I mean, totally.
Even just, as I've gotten older, when I was younger, I wanted the answers and I wanted to be that person that provided them. As I've gotten older, I'm finding that just being present and listening to another. And I did this when I was a kid too. I used to listen. I love to listen to like people who were maybe just only 10 years or 15 years older than I am now and their story, their life story. Like I used to love to listen to my grandfather, my German grandfather. He was a fascinating character. And even just at 10 or 12, he would tell his stories and I would just sit there like listening because I was fascinated. So I think it's kind of innate in me. I don't know why, but and then in my work as a therapist, you know, I was in private practice for maybe only a couple of years because I liked academics and museum work better. But that's your job. If you're a good therapist, you do a lot of listening. Right.
Yeah.
And not a lot of inserting what you think someone should do. I mean, I have my strong opinions about what it means to be a therapist, but it provided me that opportunity and it's never really left me, even though my work doesn't allow for that a lot. These people, dude, like true necrophiliacs, not murderers. You know, I'm interested in BTK and people of the like because of some of the areas of research that I do, but I'm really interested in those who don't actually want to commit those crimes, but those who have an interest in the dead themselves. So, you know, they're not the people who aren't interested in taking a life. They're just interested in indulging in the dead that I'm fascinated by because why? And so, it's those people I would be interested in just listening to, like what fascinates them about death, what draws them into death, how have they come to sexualize death? That's what I'm interested in. Where does that come from? And you know, I've looked into different theories. There are attachment theories. There are evolutionary theories. There are sociological theories. You know, and sometimes they come back to, well, it's an easier way to cope with the unknown is to be close to it. You know, death is the ultimate question. It's the ultimate unknown. We don't know what comes after death. That's why some people lean into religion and some people don't. So it's that curiosity that drives me. And every once in a while I get to talk to someone or listen to someone who's into that, but that's very rare considering the work that I do. It's been more often since I've been actually writing these new books, but not as often as I would like.
Yeah. I think there's a romanticism to death in a way that we don't understand either. I think, I remember being, you know, a young little emo fucking sad boy or whatever, like back in junior high, and just like really truly romanticizing this idea of, you know, you just hit puberty and you're like, horny, but like sad and like fucking whatever, all that shit. So like as I've gotten older, obviously, like there obviously is still a fascination with death and with the emotions attached to that and all those things. But like this idea of like the romanticism of it, or you know, sort of ideating around death and romance and how they're both whatever, that sort of has, you know, it's not as hot as it used to be for me, but there is something there, I think, for humans that they find, whether it's goth chicks or whatever, you know, like everybody has like some sort of like link to this romanticism around death. And I think, you know, whether that comes from like the literature or like Shakespeare, like whatever, I just think it's something human. And I think that has to be something that drives a lot of people in a lot of different directions.
Yeah. There's one of my favorite authors is Irwin Yalom, and he wrote a book called Staring Into the Sun. And it's about his experience as a therapist. And he actually talks about that book is about death and dying. And he talks about how a lot of his clients who are facing their death become hypersexual as a coping skill. And somehow, like when death is upon you, sex becomes something you lean into as a form of vitality, right? Sex is reproduction. Sex is life. Death is the antithesis to that. So a lot of, I think, maybe not everyone. I mean, some people, I think, just race through life not trying to think about it at all. But then there are others who understand this inexorable link between sex and death. And I think a lot of times we attach sexuality to death as a way to cope.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that.
But then, of course, we then eroticize death as a result, right?
Yeah, yeah. My grandfather, like, a year, 2 years before he died, was like hitting up all the dating sites and, you know, like going bonkers. So that's like a real world example I could give, but that makes so much sense. And I just think that's fascinating too. I want to let the audience know it's okay. We're going to do a little something here in the next couple of minutes. And then that's going to be it with you for the Halloween special, but everyone just chill out because she's already agreed to come back for a full episode, and we're gonna
I haven't even talked about like what I'm doing on my book or anything.
Exactly.
And I've like the book stuff has been I've been exposed to some interesting stuff, so that would be fun to come back and talk about those.
I mean, I truly can't wait. Do you want to give so either we can do something fun and silly, or you can give a little tease as to what you're working on book wise. Right now, it's totally up to you, but I just want...
No, let's do something fun and silly.
Okay. Okay, so let's with Dr. Death, let's figure this one out. Out of Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, and I have to throw this one in because I just think it's one of my favorites, but like the Ghostface killer from Scream, even though it's a different person every time, there is still that like singular persona, right? It's always like the people miss this too about the Scream movies that like it's not always the same actor, but it's like he's coming and going as a character moving through our modern times and like commenting on how shitty horror, okay, whatever. So out of those four, the classics, Jason, Freddy, Michael Myers and Ghostface. Who do you think, one, who is the biggest pervert out of those four? That's the first question.
The biggest pervert?
Yeah.
Freddy.
Okay. Yeah. I have to.
Freddy.
Yeah. The sweater gives
and
it away.
And that's one of the reasons why I love the Merkins, because Freddy is just as much of a freak in the Merkins as he was in the movie.
I mean,
Freddy is a twisted fucking freak.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, biggest pervert goes to Freddy. Who do you think is motivated in what they're doing by sex more out of those four? I mean, because no one's really having sex, whatever, but like there is an underlying, I feel underlying like a motivation in there somewhere for one of them.
That's a really good question. Jason, Michael.
I mean, because Ghostface has a couple of lines that are like borderline rapist, like, you know, and then obviously, you know, Freddy's a sicko.
I think probably Jason, because he's just so pissed off he's not getting laid.
Mm-hmm.
God, you know, he's just murdering everybody, you know, all these teenagers. And I think for him, it's because he's not getting any. He's just fucking pissed.
Yeah. Okay. So if he's the most pissed off one, which one of them has like the weirdest sexual hang up, right? So we've got the biggest pervert goes to Freddy.
I think the hang up would be Michael. I think he uses these sharp instruments as a pseudo phallus.
Yeah. No, I think you're
right. He's a big giant dives and shit. I'm like, dude, that you're carrying your dick in your hand. Come on now.
Yeah, and like it's always like so like forced and rough. And
yeah, like, I'm like, okay.
We know what you're trying to say, buddy. And he's like the most quiet, I feel too. So that's weird as shit. But that's like,
well, you know what they say about the quiet ones.
We do. Dr. Victoria Hartman, thank you so much for being my guest for the Halloween special 2023. Let's tell these people, these spooky probably freaked out people at this point, where they can find you, where they can hang out with you online, and what to expect in the future from you.
Well, so I have an Instagram and it's Sex Nerd Podcast. It's just at Sex Nerd Pod. And I also have a YouTube channel. It's very easy. You just got to search for Sex Nerd Podcast. Make sure you put that whole thing in, Sex Nerd Podcast. I do shorts and full episodes there. And I do everything from, you know, talking about sexual sciences to true crime. So I kind of blend the two there. And that's primarily where, where I'm at, is YouTube and Instagram. These days. And what's coming up next, like I said, I'm writing these two books called The Erotic Art of Serial Killers 1 and 2. So that's been primarily what I've been doing. I actually just wrote an article on that for Sinister Magazine that's put out. You just sinistermagazine.com, I think it's .com, or just Google Sinister Magazine. It's done here locally in Las Vegas, this magazine. And I've just been on a lot of podcasts. So you just have to search my name and I'll probably pop up somewhere.
Amazing. Well, happy Halloween. Thank you for being here. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk sooner than later. I can't wait.
Sounds great.
Hope you guys are enjoying Body Count, the 2023 Sex Party Halloween special. Big thank you to my guest, Dr. Victoria Hartman, for being on the show and educating us all on necrophilia. She will be back for a full episode this season, so look forward to that. Random Halloween fact, as you know, we like to drop on these things. Steve Clark, a gentleman from Pennsylvania, holds the world record for carving a jack-o'-lantern, for carving a pumpkin.
16.47 seconds.
Carve the full thing. So if he's that fast with his hands, imagine what else
he's capable of, ladies.
This next conversation is with friend of the show, fellow podcast host,
Desiree Simone.
Desiree and I are going to talk which one of your favorite horror movie icons is probably the horniest, sickest fuck out there. We have a slight disagreement about it. We also talk Halloween costume etiquette at parties, at the club. How do you get a drink? What do you do with your accessories without fucking with everybody around you? Also, how do you win the big money at some of these huge Halloween costume contests? Buckle up. Here we go. And enjoy my conversation with Desiree Simone.
Happy Halloween.
Desiree Simone, welcome to Sex Party, but more importantly, welcome to the 2023 Sex Party Halloween special. How the fuck are you, my friend?
Booyah, I'm so excited. How are you doing, babe?
I'm a little tired. We talked earlier about it, right? But we've got a drink in hand. And, you know, listen, this is the thing with these specials and also with Sex Party in general. Like, the show must go on, you guys. And if
we have to persevere.
Right. And if you tune in one of these weeks and there's just a fucking corpse sitting here, you're welcome. So you'll get your episode. I love you all. No, I'm doing great. I'm excited. It's Halloween, or it's near Halloween. I'm not going to reveal my costume yet, although maybe by this point it's already on social media. Do you know what you're going to be for Halloween?
So I actually have multiple costumes because I am hosting a Halloween party at one of my favorite clubs, which I'm super excited about. I did their Halloween a few years ago. And so for that particular event, they're having a very kind of eyes wide shut, like super dressed up Harlequin mask and everything. So I have this really tight, sheer, like bustier kind of thing with this gorgeous, like silver mask. And then one of my favorite, like staple dive bars here on the beach, I'm going to go dressed up as I like to call her, Frederica Krueger. It's a Freddy Krueger dress with like knee-high boots and like the hat and everything. So
I got two outfits. Yes. So wait, are these events on different nights?
They're on different nights.
Yeah, thank God.
On different nights. Yeah. So it's literally Friday night and Saturday night. So Sunday, don't nobody call me because I'm going to be dead to the world.
No, you're going to be cheering on the fucking Kansas City Chiefs, right?
Don't do that to me.
Well,
we're going to talk about Halloween.
Yeah. So, okay. So is the eyes wide shut party, is that like, That's like a party. It's not like a sex party.
It is a party. It is not a sex party. But the funny thing is like they originally had one concept, and I need to find out why they did this. They originally had one concept and then all of a sudden changed their marketing to this. And I am not mad at it. But at the same time, I'm like, I hope you realize that some people might take this into a different way.
Sure.
And so I'm very intrigued. And I noticed that the Halloween contest, because I'm hosting the contest and a couple other events that are going on at this club, but like the contest is strictly for women. So I'm like,
okay,
this could be, I am not mad at this. So I'm really excited about how this is going to turn out.
You know, I think this is fucking great. And I'm so happy that you could be a part of the Halloween special this year. Like there's nobody better to bring in this year than you. And so
Stop it.
I think you know, as someone who has spent 15 years in the nightlife, has done 15, maybe 20, the math doesn't add up, but whatever. What I used to do is like try to outdo all the other clubs when I was doing my parties, and we would like raise a shitload of money. I would fucking get sponsors.
Yep.
And I would like, you know, in September, I'd be like, it's $1,000 for sexiest costume, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so all of a sudden, all these women who are doing the horny Freddy Krueger and like whatever, oh my God, $1,000. And some other club would be like, we're doing $1,100. They'd be like, okay, okay.
I'm doing $2,000.
Right. So, but by the time we got there, it's $5,000 or $10,000. Like, I actually did a party where it was $10,000 for a second. It was really, I know. Nice. It's really dumb though, right? Because then you
it's not.
I mean, you get a lot of crazy people. You get dudes dressing up as women to try to do the sex, like whatever. which is totally fine. Like we love that. Sexy is sexy, do your thing.
This
but
is
you
true.
You get a lot of like three kids in a trench coat. Okay, maybe not. Okay, now I'm off on some other shit. But, Jesus. There were no children at my party, but you know what I mean.
There's kind of took a turn.
People trying to fake stuff to win money.
So
I think, you know, from me to you, right, as someone who's about to host the contest, the party, the whole thing, how do you win one of these things? Because I have my answers and I'll give it afterwards. But like, if you're trying to be horny, because Halloween, let's be real. Halloween is a fucking horny, spooky holiday, right?
That is it.
You can be grimy and horny. I feel like we're entering this post-COVID high art phase where there's like all these movies that were like elevated horror that are now are trying to bring down and make horny, which is cool. I love this. Like Midsummer and all that stuff. So how do you win a sexiest costume contest?
So I think whether it's sexy or just any costume contest in general, it's all about personality. Because let's be honest, and I already can mentally see this, I already feel that there's going to be at least 10 girls dressed up as Megan, the doll. And that's a very like, you know, the look, you know, the aesthetic, but what's going to happen is it's going to be the girl that gets up there that does like the full on dance from the movie that has a personality. So I don't care if it's 15 sexy nurses, there's going to be somebody who's going to stand out personality wise. And granted, I'm just the host. I'm not the judge. But even if I were judging, it will always be personality that gets me. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm also looking for something that isn't overtly sexual. I want like the innuendo to be there. I don't want you to come in like a full bodysuit that you got at like Secrets or some bullshit like that, right? What I do want is something that is going to make me go, that is really sexy. And there's like a subtlety to it. Now, don't get me wrong. I want bustier. I want garter belts. I want fishnets. But there's a way to market that package for you to go, okay, that's really hot. So I think, again, it's always going to be that personality. What are you bringing to the costume? Because there will always be the nurses. There'll always be the pilots. There'll always be, what is it, police officers.
The pilots.
There's always a pilot. There's an army person.
Spirit Air.
Exactly, right? There's a schoolgirl. Like, there's always going to be those things.
Sure. But
then I also love, I love also, like, the ironic costumes. You know, the girl who's dressed up as a one-night stand, and it's literally, like, a nightstand that she's dressed up on with, like, a lamp. Like, that kind of shit makes me giggle. So we'll see. I'm really excited. Like I said, I hosted this party a couple of years ago. Really excited to see how it turns out. I love that they have masks at the door for people who do not have them, because a mask is required. And already I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. This could be fun.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, as someone who's done this fucking bullshit for a long time, I think you're right. There needs to be tits and ass, right? But it has to be creative tits and ass, because you can do Harley Quinn, right? But only somebody is going to do, the creative person is going to find a way to do Harley Quinn in a way who she's just broken up with the Joker, and now she's with Poison Ivy in a different, with the mallet, with a different outfit, or like whatever. There's like different things that you can do. Like, you can take the sexiness and put it with just a little bit of creativity, a little bit of, you said the woman was like in a dresser, like in the nightstand or whatever. Like, that's.
Yeah. Like the one, like she dressed up as a one nightstand years ago. And
yeah,
so I thought, oh, okay. That makes me giggle.
For sure.
I like that.
I remember one year, someone actually, remember when Kim Kardashian, like they broke into her, supposedly broke. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I am I am saying, listen, this is the Halloween special. We can get a little off book, right?
We can.
this woman came to the party, and she entered the sexiest costume contest as a kidnapped or like bound and gagged Kim Kardashian, because Kim Kardashian's hotel room had just gotten broken into.
In Paris. Yeah.
Gag ball, handcuffs, the whole thing, right? She didn't win. She came in like fourth, but like, you know.
But still something like that, like I would be like.
And I think that year, actually, the woman who won was like the witchy version of whatever the Cara Delevingne's character from Suicide Squad, like head to toe painted and like,
oh yeah,
but like she was like naked and like titty and ass, but like she was like painted and her eyes were all glowy and crazy. So like you can combine that shit, like totally.
You put in the time, you put in the effort. Absolutely. Mm. Like I love that. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of the character, but yeah, that's a hot costume. That's a hot look.
Yeah. I feel like you need to like, you got to pull both of them off. Like if you're going to try to like, and also like, maybe like don't go to parties that aren't offering like a big cash reward. Right.
True.
You know, because cosplay is a thing now. It's in our culture. People are like, whatever. And they're doing the horny stuff. They're doing the, that's like on a regular basis, right? And so there's a lot more competition for that money now. Is there a cash reward for this party? Do I need to fly to Florida and...
$1,000.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, so not too bad.
The base level. That's all right.
Yeah. $1,000.
$1,000 in cash though is $1,000 in cash.
That's $1,000 more than I have. Mm-hmm. So.
So is this for just best costume overall?
That's the best costume overall. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Traditionally, we've done like a second and a third, and like third's usually like $100 bar tab or something. So I don't know if they're going to be doing that, but the top prize is $1,000. So. Yeah.
Man, see what they should do, grand in cash, grand bar tab.
Oh, dear God. Then in that case, I will be entering in this. I will be entering in this real quick.
Yeah.
The girl can kill some Don Julio, let me tell you.
Yeah. At that point, you're just ordering like pancake shots and like sending them all around everywhere.
Everybody gets one.
Yeah. But like also too, like if you're going to a party, right? Like, and let's just, cause you're from the bar world. So am I, obviously we've said it fucking 15 times. Let's like talk about some etiquette, right? If you're going to be going to these parties and you're dressed in something, everyone's shit is bigger, right?
Yes.
The tits are out. The fucking shoulder pads are like, how do you like not piss off your bartender when you're ordering the blood shots? Like, right. You have to have some sort of like, I realize it's horny Halloween etiquette. Mm-hmm. I feel like people forget this.
I mean, I think just in general, people forget bar etiquette. Like, number one, don't snap at me. Don't you dare. Don't snap at me. Trust me. I see you. I promise you. I see you.
Like,
see
actually you. Snap with their fingers.
Oh God. Yeah. Have you ever gotten that?
Hell no.
Oh yeah. I've gotten a snap. I've gotten a snap.
I've never seen that in my fucking horror.
I've gotten a snap. Definitely the sweeties. From guys, sweetie, baby, don't do that. But just in general, I think there's like a level of respect. What I have seen, and I have to say, girls, if you are going to wear a costume and it has some sort of an accessory, let's say you're like Glinda the Good Witch and you've got a wand, don't wave that in the face of the bartender. Don't be that person. Like whatever accessory, like I'm going to be Freddy Krueger, right? I have the glove. I'm not going to sit there and like dangle the fucking glove in front of the bartender to get a Jaeger bomb. Like, just don't do that. I promise you, they see you. Just be respectful.
Yeah. I mean, great advice. I just feel like we haven't seen a Halloween that's this far removed from COVID. And I just think like, although this one does feel, I will say, there was all this bullshit where people are like, we talked about it in the last time you were on the show, like people were like freaking out in June about Halloween. But like now that we're in this bullshit and it's cold and people are fucking at it, everyone's got a bad attitude and no one's sleeping.
Some people more so than others.
Correct. And people like, there's no, the only person I see posting like, this is my horror movie list. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. I just can't hide it. It's you, right? Like, I don't see anybody else. Like, you guys fought so hard to be here, to be in October. You took June away from us, July, we August.
Did.
And now that we're here, now everyone's talking about Christmas. Talking about Christmas.
We're not talking about Christmas yet. First of all, I got to let my boy Thanksgiving coming out. And speaking of that, November 17th. Have you seen the new trailer for Thanksgiving by Eli Roth?
I'm so like jacked for this movie because out of all the fake trailers, I was like, okay, cool. And it looks kind of like bloody, horny kind of.
That, which is his thing. Mm-hmm. Like Cabin in the Woods was such a beautiful representation of all the satirical things that make horror great. And so I don't remember the actor's name, but the guy from Suits plays the sheriff and he's in the trailer. And just watching him in the trailer, I was like, I cannot wait for this movie to come out. So like I've got my whole spooky season. I've got all of October, and then come November 17th, just before Thanksgiving, Eli Roth gives us this gift of this, what looks like a really good cheesy slasher film. Surrounded by a holiday, which honestly doesn't get a lot of horror love. So I'm excited.
I would say that Thanksgiving, this is a spicy one, but I'm gonna be honest.
It's a hot take.
It's a fucking hot take. Okay. A sex party hot take from me. Which that never happened. I feel like Thanksgiving gets more love than Valentine's Day. So
wow, that's a hot take.
People hate Valentine's Day. They just,
that is a hot take.
Yeah. People are so into the food. I'm not saying like they're dressing like pilgrims or anything like that, right? But or maybe there is a party that you're hosting or something where people are dressing.
There is. It is an Eyes Wide Shut themed Thanksgiving party.
Hopefully it's private and it's at a fucking mansion. With some drumsticks.
The turkey's not the only thing getting stuffed.
There we go. That might be a clip. We might have to clip that. Wow. Oh, man. Literally, my phone just went off and it was Credit Karma, and they're not fucking messaging me about my credit. They heard what you said.
They heard that and they were like, Dustin.
Don't forget us for Christmas. I do feel like people rush through these holidays. Yeah. And now that we're in, I mean, it's mid-October when we're recording this. Mm-hmm. We've got a week, 2 weeks to go to Halloween. And people are just like, I don't know. Christmas.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. But I just feel like also it's the silent ones that you have to really be careful with. The silent holidays is where the Walmart gets overthrown or the Halloween party, whatever. So I think it is important if you're going to go to the fucking Halloween party dressed as like the sexy Michael Myers with the giant machete, like watch your space, right? The bartender needs some room to work. Mm-hmm. You know, how many fucking pumpkin bomb shots get knocked over by the devil fucking. Right.
Yeah.
So like,
again, if you have accessories, just be mindful of that. Like, just don't be that guy who's a douche. You know, if you're a cheerleader and you've got the pom-poms, we get it. We see them. So just be mindful of any time you bring accessories. Also, don't do a lot of accessories. Like, if you're going to be, you know, a Trojan Spartan whatever, and you've got like a shield and, you know, a friggin' axe, like, that's a bit much. It's overkill. So just chill with the accessories.
What do you think will be like the sexy costumes this year? Do you have any predictions?
Like I said, Megan, definitely on a horror basis. I think a lot of girls are going to be coming up as Megan.
Will they make their boyfriends then be Chucky? And is that weird because they're dolls and they're small?
No. Can I just tell you, anytime I ever see horror themed costumes, I get excited. So I've seen a lot of Chucky and Bride of Chucky's, like Tiffany's. I get so excited when I see that. So the Chucky TV series that I think is on Paramount is really popular now. So to see like Chucky's and Tiffany's would make my little heart happy. So I think Megan will be a big one for girls to do. Obviously, because I went to the spirit store, I picked up my costume and I saw, I don't know how many little girls picking theirs out. There's going to be a shit ton of Barbie. It's inevitable. There's going to be a lot of Barbies. So it'll be very much like that movie Never Been Kissed, where the girls at the very end dressed up as the five different Barbies. There will be a lot of Barbie girls this year, unfortunately. And as much as I hate to say this, there will probably be a lot of Taylor Swift inspired costumes. Also, there will greatly be a lot of Beyonce Renaissance inspired costumes as well. So,
yeah. And like, you know, maybe someone figures out how to do like a slutty Oppenheimer.
Oh,
you know, with the hat and shit. Come on.
Because this ass is the bomb.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
If you're listening and you dress up as a slutty Oppenheimer, please like DM us because we have to see.
Yeah. It. Send it tag at sexparty.fm. You know, for real. Tag
both of us. I have to see this.
Yeah. We will both repost because I think that's amazing.
We will.
Yeah.
We'll 100%. If you're going to be a slutty Oppenheimer, yeah, please tag us.
You know, with the one that I was really amazed, we spoke a bit about Chucky, about Child's Play already. And there's on your shirt plug, right? Yep. The one that I'm amazed at is the fact that this can be pulled off is like the sexy Chucky costume, like,
yeah,
because sometimes the sexy Jason just doesn't work, right?
It does not work,
right? The sexy Freddy Krueger it can backfire, right? But the one that I've seen a few times the last couple of years where I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't supposed to be, but it is. Like, I've seen the sexy Chucky doll. Women somehow I've been able to, even with the stitching on the face and shit. Why does that, how can that be sexy? And is that weird?
I don't think it's weird at all. First of all, we're not going to be kink shaming anybody here. So I don't think that shit's weird at all.
Exactly.
I think, and I've seen what you're talking about. It's basically Chucky, the good guy doll, is just a very simple overall. So I've seen girls in like really tight overalls, boobs all out with a really great Chucky makeup with the eyelashes and the great stitching. Like, shout out to those really creative makeup girlies, because that's where like TikTok is killing it, where girls are just 100% just making that character uber sexy, and it still comes off a little bit scary, and I love that. I'm 100% here for that.
I have to agree with my own statement. I'm agreeing with my own statement.
It never happens.
Speaking of, you know, horror characters, I think we should get into some of the classics, right? And when I say classics, and you can feel free to add to this if you want, but like, I would say my core four, wink, my core four franchises, right? You've got Freddy Krueger, you've got Jason Voorhees, you've got Michael Myers. And like, personally, I add Ghostface, and I know what people are going to say. People are going to say Ghostface has been 15 different people, yada, yada, yada. But
Jason has been 15 different people.
Well, I mean, like the character. It's always a different character in the Ghostface. Yeah,
it's a different person, right.
But that core like personality for Ghostface, if you really pay attention, it's the same personality evolving. He makes jokes about dying the last time. They're just very subtle, like, and whatever. And so out of those four, and feel free to add, who do you think is the horniest? If we delve into the psyche of Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, and really think about it, because this might be a trick question, Michael Myers and Ghostface, which one of them is like the horniest character?
Ghostface. I don't even need to debate this. All right. So we're talking Michael Myers, we're talking Jason Voorhees, we're talking Freddy Krueger, and we're talking Ghostface. Okay, so let's go Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees is a mongoloid. He was a mongoloid that we thought died in the lake. And the trauma related to that was because the counselors were having sex, not paying attention to him. So therefore, based on that, I think Jason's a little asexual. So Jason, we're going to go ahead and say out. Michael Myers. Michael had a lot of voyeuristic tendencies. If you remember the very first one, he sees his sister. She's like half bucky naked. Loves to kill people related to sex. I think he's more of the voyeuristic, pent up sexual frustration. I'm going to put him on the side because he loves to watch the act. And then he's like, you know what? Fuck it. You're killed. Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger is going to be my close second because it's the dream aspect. Meaning I'm going to be giving you a lot of nocturnal emissions. I'm going to be getting your dreams. I'm going to be getting deep into the psyche. So for that reason, that's kind of kinky, and I'm going to give that to you. But Ghostface, that's straight up. If Christian Grey were a killer, it would be Ghostface. You're getting sex. You're getting American Psycho. You're getting Christian Bale as Ghostface. That's what you're getting. That right there is, that's sex right there. So yeah, I'm gonna say Ghostface without a doubt.
That's a great answer. A couple things though.
Respectfully, I disagree.
Well, to be honest, I don't really know. And like with this special, I'm trying to find out. I asked one of the doctors that was on different answers, spoiler alert, in case it hasn't been shown yet. Right. But like, I think you're right. There's something super, super phallic about the knife with Ghostface, just the knife. Yep. Right.
Yeah.
And he's like up in your fucking thing with that voice. He's very horny. And I love that. I actually admire that about him. because his kills are always so personal. It's it's like the thing, or like when there's like even more violent Ghostface, he's like really opening you up, you know. There's always something about being, there's a comment about being entered or putting something inside you, right? So I gotta hand it to you there, right? But I feel
Ghostface.
I feel like Jason, hold on, I'm not saying this is my final answer. But I do have a case for Jason Voorhees. So he died, and it was because counselors were fucking, right? Like, hot, young, it's summertime, camp counselors. He died, right? For some reason, we still don't know. I hope we never find out. He comes back to life for fucking like 40 years, and he just fucking slaughters every camp counselor.
Everybody.
I feel like there's a lot of anger there. Like, I feel like at some point obviously they won't show it, but maybe in the comic book or something, right? Where they won't get in trouble for it. He's got to be out in the woods. There's some cave where he's just fucking a ton of animals or something. There's some bestiality or something going. Don't you feel like he's just very big and angry about sex?
No.
See, I disagree.
I can't. Now, if anybody's going to be doing that in like an underground bomb shelter, it's 100% Michael Myers. Michael's going to be doing that. See, Michael's going to be getting a swerve on.
Michael has an incest thing going on,
which is disgusting, and we're not condoning that on this podcast, but I'm telling you, if anybody's going to be doing it, it's going to be Michael.
But most Michael Myers movies are based around him like chasing his sister around, whom he never kills, right?
Who he never kills.
And he's so quiet, right? And it's always like the quiet ones that...
The strong and silent type, yeah.
Yeah, he's really strong too. And just Freddy Krueger's sweater alone makes him like the fucking grossest pervert of all time. Like, he's very janitorial, creepy. I have a wall of pictures downstairs of the high school. Well, girls.
That is the lore. Like, Freddy was a janitor, if I'm correct. He worked with kids. He was a perv. The families collectively set him on fire and killed him. And then, of course, you know, as all curses happen in horror, he came back to life to torment all the people that were in this town. So, yeah, he was an actual perv who was killed for being a perv.
Okay, so you're still, after all that evidence, you're still going to go with Ghostface.
Ghostface is my number one, followed very closely by Pervy Freddy.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to say my number one is Jason, because I know that dude's, I know he's in the woods just fucking a black bear up the ass, like, right? Number one. Number two, man, YouTube is gonna just flag the shit out of this.
It's so bad.
It's so fucked.
I can't wait.
Me neither. I have one more warning over there.
Bring it on.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. I'm gonna say Jason, for he's number one, most horniest. Mm-hmm. He's just fucking angry, whatever. Mm-hmm. But number two, it is so close, is Ghostface for sure.
Ghostface was my number one.
Freddy for me is too obvious, and I think I think that we never, like, in the old original lore, like, he, like, the parents are like, oh, we fucking lit this guy on fire. Mm-hmm. He was just a fucking creep. He really wasn't a child molester or whatever, right? So we killed this guy. Oops.
And so then, we killed him.
And that's, but in the new lore, or what they tried to do for the new
lore. And the new one, which was just on TV and I was watching it before I came in here. Yeah. Like, all really the parents got together and killed him.
But he really was like a fucking fucker. He was. So, like, that's not, and that's not, or he was a wannabe. That's getting bleeped.
We're gonna add that.
And so it's just too obvious. I just feel like that's not, we're not gonna mess with that. So, like, whatever. Michael Myers is just weird. He's just like that dude who's in the back of the class. Like, Michael Myers is a definite, like, school shooter material, right? And there's like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, there's nothing horny about that.
For sure, but they're the people with the highest level of sexual pent-up frustration, which is why I'm telling you he's going to be doing some nasty shit. And unfortunately, in the vein of, I want to see my sister naked, which is just uncomfortable within itself.
Well, he was ahead of the curve with porn because, like, porn has, you know, we've gone to all the taboos. You know, if you go to Pornhub, it's sister, stepsister, stepbrother.
Stepbrother, sister.
Right. So Michael Myers maybe is like a sexual innovator.
He's an innovator. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, for sure. He's way ahead of his time. I mean, I think that's a solid ranking. I mean,
yeah, I think so.
Ghostface is in the top two on both of ours. So, so whatever.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. And so do you have thoughts on like the final girl situation, right? Because we have Sydney Prescott from Scream, right?
Yep.
She's the ultimate final girl, I think. We have Jamie Lee Curtis or Laurie Strode, if you will, from Halloween. Which is the sister of Michael Myers, depending on continuity. And then Heather Langenkamp, right? From
Freddy.
See, and people don't give her enough due.
They really don't. I think it's just because she seemed very, she just didn't have a strong enough presence of really going for it when it came to the kills. But Heather was in pretty much all of them up until a certain point. So, and I really thought her performance was really dynamic, especially in the first one. So, I mean, matter of fact, we just recorded our Halloween episode. And so we talked about the final girls as well. And so at the end of the day, the concept of the final girl is because of Jamie Lee Curtis, I think. And I think it's also very appropriate that her mom, Janet Lee, from The Birds, is, and that's, I think, kind of having that literal lineage makes it where I can't talk about Final Girls and not have Jamie Lee at the pinnacle of it all. It's just really hard. Not to mention, you get outside of Halloween and then you've got Prom Night that Jamie Lee killed in it. You've got The Fog where Jamie Lee was, you know, smoking hot. And so I think it's, I think you have people like Jamie Lee who paved the way for Heather. And then you have, Sydney Prescott, who comes in and takes it into a very new generation. Now, what I will say is we just started watching Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, which if you have not started to watch this, I need you to immediately run and start to watch it. So Mike Flanagan, who did The Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor and all of these, has now done The Fall of the House of Usher, which is all based off of Edgar Allan Poe. And Carla Gugino is in this series, and she did the Haunting of Hill House and a couple other Mike Flanagan things. She also did Gerald's Game, which is a Stephen King novel.
And super horny, super awesome,
super horny, like such a horny, sexy movie. The book is phenomenal, but I personally, and this is what I talked about in our podcast, I would like to nominate this new generation of Final Girls with Carla Gugino, because her characters, her development, her acting, not to mention Fall of the House of Usher is so sexy. It is so, first of all, the first episode, there is a massive sex party.
Okay.
And people are masked. I'm just gonna stop right there. Okay. You need to go see it. And then Carla's performance is amazing. But like I said, between this, between The Haunting of Hill House, between Gerald's Game, like never in a million years did I think this chick from that god-awful Pauly Shore movie that she did in the 90s would be this person, son-in-law, there we go.
Yeah.
To be this person that has now kind of dipped into horror. Her characters are great. Her subtle acting, like I said, there's 8 episodes of Fall of the House of Usher. We just binged the first 3 last night. And some of the things that she does just with her eyes, I was like, good Lord, like this is really, really good. So I'm going to put Carla on my new list of people to definitely look out.
Yeah, no, that's pretty dope too. Like that's a great point. And Haunting of Hill House was one of my favorites from a couple. So good. And there was some horniness in there somewhere. There's also a lot of like weird hidden things in there. If you look around, which I'm always a huge fan of Easter eggs, I'm constantly stashing things in my episode descriptions that people are like, wait, does that mean? So there's that. What do we think about the new Scream franchise? And because there's technically two or three final girls, Jenna Ortega, Melissa Barrera, and if you count her, could not think of her name, Randy's niece, that maybe would be, but the two main final girls from Scream 5 and Scream 6, spoiler alert, they both survived, Jenna Ortega, Melissa Barrera. Are they on your list of the new age final girls? You're not sure where they're going with this?
Not sure where they're going because I have not, and part of me refuses to watch it.
No.
Why? It's so hard because for me, like the first three, I want to keep it in this bubble of just classic. Although I have heard it is really good. So one of the things I did say this year, this spooky season, was I'm going to go against what I said I would never do, because I remember when they first started talking about it and I emphatically was like, I'm not doing this. I will give this a chance. I really will. Like the first three, like they just have my heart and I just did not want it to go and progress more than that. Mm-hmm. But I will. Yeah, I'll give it a try. I really didn't want to, but I'll do it.
It's so worth it. They're really well written and really great. And
that's what I've heard. I have heard that.
I mean, nothing is perfect, but it's definitely better than part four. And like, not talking shit about part four, because part four has like this amazing, you know, with Jill being the killer and all, like that. It has like its own. There's a lot of questions about that, like whatever. But like this like looks at everything that's come before. Who is your favorite Ghostface?
I mean, I'm gonna go back to the original, because at the end of the day, I'm always a big sucker for, I'm gonna give you what makes horror great, and I'm gonna give you every bit of stereotype. The fact that you've got Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich that are just like, we're going to plan this out. Here's why. Because there is a legitimate horror blueprint that's in every horror. And then not to mention, the dumb idiots walk you through the whole process. And it's like, why are you still talking? Like, you could be stabbing and Sydney could be like been dead by this point. Mm-hmm. They're always going to be my favorite. I absolutely loved that concept of, let's dive deep into the stereotypes of horror. It's one of the reasons why I love Cabin in the Woods. I absolutely love it for that too.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to say this is going to be
Jill.
No. This one's more controversial.
Another hot take, ladies and gentlemen.
honestly, and he gets so much shit. I'm gonna say Roman Bridger. He's my favorite. I don't give a fuck, right? He was the only singular Ghostface that we know of.
Yeah.
He was motivated. He was emotional. Mm-hmm. His mom was fucking like gang raped by a bunch of dudes, and then she shunned him, right? So like,
which is why you should go crazy, right?
Yeah, and he was like trying to take out his sister. So like, there's another brother sister thing there happening. Mm-hmm. At the end, she's like holding his hand after she stabs him to death or whatever. Yeah. Almost. So I feel like Roman gets shit on a lot, and that movie was made during that writer's strike, and that's why they whatever. But like, I'm gonna go with Roman Bridger.
I can get down with that. Like, I can 100% get down with that.
A lot of people are saying, I see it a lot now, is Mrs. Loomis is their favorite from part two. Yeah. It's kind of, do you have a problem with Mrs. Loomis?
No, it is good. Like, I can kind of give that one to you.
Yeah. She had a weird horny thing going on too.
They all did, which is why Ghostface is my number one horn dog, of course.
Yeah, I feel like
that's my number one horn dog.
Well, then you're gonna love these new Scream movies because they're horny as shit. The other kid. Okay. I won't or what's going on unless you already
spoiled. Don't know me. I haven't spoiled it, but okay.
Spoiler alert, they're all horny.
Okay. Then in that case, I'll be watching it once we're done with this.
Go right into five, then right into six.
Heck yeah.
Desiree Simone, happy Halloween. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sex Party 2023, I believe. This is the year we're in Halloween special. Let's remind these weirdos and ghosts and, you know, drunks, whoever's,
freaks and goblins.
Oh yeah, whoever's listening, whoever's watching, let's remind them where they can find you, where they can hang out with you.
You can 100% hang out. You can come over to at IMD Simone on the Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter, and the website is Desiree-Simone.com.
And it will be linked. I look forward to hearing about this Eyes Wide Shut party. And as always, you know we'll talk soon.
We are going to. Bye, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you to Desiree Simone for being my special guest for this Halloween special episode. Listen, guys, it's Jason Voorhees. He's in a cave in the woods constantly. With bears and squirrels and rabbits and probably his mother's head having all sorts of
gangbangs
and whatever. He's a sick fuck. He's big. He's muscular. You can tell when he kills somebody, it's just coming from some place of horniness. So I'm sticking to my guns on that. My next and final guest for this Halloween special, you know her from the acclaimed Apple podcast,
Mind of a Monster.
Mind of a Murderer and Stalk, Someone's Watching on Investigation Discovery, as well as Under Oath on A&E. It's Dr. Michelle Ward. Dr. Michelle Ward is a criminal psychologist, and we are going to chat about what makes a serial killer. Is it in the genes?
Are you screwed from birth?
Is it a mixture of nature and nurture? What do you do if you discover somebody has these traits that may lead them to be a serial killer, right? How many serial killers are out there? This is another one of those fascinating conversations. And I am incredibly honored that Dr. Michelle Ward was able to make the Halloween special. So without further ado, enjoy the final interview of the Halloween special
with Dr. Michelle Ward.
Happy Halloween.
Dr. Michelle Ward, hello. Welcome to the 2023 Halloween special for Sex Party. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. I don't normally get to talk about sex and Halloween, so I'm kind of excited. I feel like a newbie.
Well, I don't think you're a newbie in anything, right? And I think you bring, especially for Halloween, you bring a level of intrigue, mystery, some dark shit. And so this is just fucking perfect for the special. We do this every year. For the people who don't know who you are, they've never heard your voice, seen your face, could you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So my name is Michelle Ward. I am a criminal neuroscientist or a criminal psychologist, depends which degree you care about. I study the brains, the biology, and the genetics of violent crime. I've been doing that for many years. I talk to serial killers for fun. I have actually stuck many murderers into MRIs, measuring their brains. And while I did that primarily for research in the beginning of my career, I have segued into entertainment. So I've got a couple of TV shows. One is called The Mind of a Murderer, where I go into prisons and I talk to criminals and kind of poke the bear and try to figure out as much as I can to understand why they commit the crimes. Another TV show called Stalked, Someone's Watching. Those are both on Investigation Discovery, at least the reruns are. And a podcast called The Mind of a Monster, which is different from Mind of a Murderer, and a podcast called How Not to Raise a Serial Killer. And the purpose of that is to take all of this science that we have about why people commit crimes and put it into some sort of public sphere so that if we see certain behaviors in children, not only can I tell you like what's behind it, but also what to do to stop it, to push them off of a criminal trajectory. So that one I think is the most important, but it's got the fewest the followers. So I don't know what it agrees.
Well, no one wants to think sweet little Timmy is going to grow up and be a serial killer.
No, Timmy's an asshole and he's going to grow up and be a killer.
Yes. Well, not yes, but like, you know, your kid's right. A dick. Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, and so a million questions right off the bat and everyone's like, oh, ask her. Like I can feel them in the ether right now trying to psychically transmit into the past me to ask you certain things. But I have questions and I know they do too. So I will be the audience's avatar and I will say, how common, right? How common is a serial killer in America?
Super rare. And I mean, it's like plane crashes, right? It's so publicized that it feels like everyone is going to kill you, but it's our rarest type of murder. Normally, those are very cold-blooded murders. They're predatory. They plan it out. It takes a lot of work and a lot of hiding. Most of our murderers are hot-blooded killers. They're impulsive. They do things, you know, very infrequently as it premeditated. However, it happens with enough frequency for us to pay attention to it and over time with enough frequency for us to get statistically valuable information out of it. So it's people equate psychopathy, psychopaths with serial killers, but one out of every 100 of us is a psychopath. But very few psychopaths become serial killers. They usually become hedge fund managers or presidents of banks or, you know, they end up in Hollywood. So.
Of course they do. Yeah. There's a lot of monsters in the corporate world, wherever you go. Yeah. So, and the other thing too, it's like when you hear about a serial killer, it's always, I mean, I guess I should just ask, like, why are serial killers predominantly men? I mean, there aren't that many female serial killers.
You know, it's interesting. And I think the answer is twofold. First of all, if you do have a female serial killer, they're usually much better than their male counterparts. So they don't get caught. So sorry, you have the broken chromosome in a less developed brain, which does mature and develop eventually to match a female's. But usually they're better at it. They're better at hiding. Now, there are fewer of them, I believe, statistically anyway. And I think, first of all, we don't have the testosterone that males tend to have. But we also have what I call protective factors. They're for a woman to be devoid of empathy, guilt, and remorse, to completely shed some of those very archaic, but unfortunately pretty accurate tendencies for us to take care of things and people. I mean, evolution is evolution. We historically have stayed home with the babies and taken care of them. Of course, socially, we've changed a lot of that. But in order for us to overcome that and kill, and women do kill, they do kill. It's just a bigger hurdle, I think, for them to get there. But they can have some of the same brain deficits that we see in male killers, some of the same environmental traumas that we can see trigger a murdering personality. They can still have them, but damn, I'd much rather be face to face with a male. Now, males are vicious. They're vicious. They're just sloppier.
Yeah. I mean, well, women are like incredibly detailed, right? So that has to play a significant role. Like women are always all about the details. So like that has to play, you know, some sort of role in not getting caught. If you remember, oh, the blood splatter went this way, I need to spray that, whatever it is, right? So that's not a tough thing to believe for me. I think that actually makes a lot of sense. How many active serial killers would you say at any given time are in operation, right? Like, and is it like, is every serial killer, is it a compulsion thing? Is it almost like a passionate, like almost like sexual thing that powers them, or is everyone different?
So you can get there several different ways. I wouldn't even venture a guess to say how many are operated at any given time, because Russia and India, like that, they probably are. I mean, it's swarming with them, but they don't get caught. We don't know. There's so many humans there. So many go missing. It's just unaccounted for. I would say that the way you become a serial killer, the most commonly is you have, let's just use the most basic psychopathy, a psychopath. they are biologically reduced in emotions, primarily, as I mentioned, guilt, remorse, and empathy. That we, it actually lives in a part of the limbic system of the brain called the amygdala, and it's shrunken and little and doesn't work very well in a psychopath. That does not mean that they will become killers, but they're also very goal-driven people. So if their goal is to kill, they're going to be able to do that without feeling bad about it. That said, they have to also be able to get away with it, and it has to serve a purpose for them. Psychopaths tend to have a lower resting heart rate. They don't have anticipatory fear. They don't, they're just under aroused. And I know that's a fun word to say on sex party, but I'm not talking sexually. I'm talking just biologically. They're just kind of bored. They don't, it takes a lot more to get their adrenaline going. So often they murder just to feel fucking normal. They murder to get kind of that high, just since they're sensation seekers, they're thrill seekers. And for many, then this is where you come in, it's sexual. So a lot of the murderers I've been studying recently cannot achieve or attain orgasm unless they're in the throes of committing a murder.
Wow. Okay.
By the way, so, women too.
Okay. So are there women that you have studied recently that cannot have an orgasm without murdering someone?
They know better than to really talk about it right now, but there's a famous example, Jolly Jane Topin, this nurse in England, and she talked about voluptuous delight, that when she watched someone die is when she would have the sexual arousal. You know, our brains are organs, just like every other part of your body, and they can have defects that look like this. I mean, people can be attracted to things that just aren't sexual, like children. They're not sexual, but people can be attracted to animals. I mean, there are things that can arouse you for no reason. I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer, everyone, you know, likes to talk about him like it's a regular thing, but he was so malformed. I mean, he was aroused by semi-comatose male torsos. That's just what did it for him. He actually didn't enjoy killing people at all, but that was his sexual thing. So you can become a serial killer from various ways, but it's typically to satisfy an urge.
Yeah. And it's like, it has to be the settings, the perfect storm, right? The settings have to be just right. You have to be genetically predisposed or?
Well, there's absolute genetic predispositions, especially psychopathy is inherited. And people come up against me all the time saying, oh no, you make a psychopath. They're not born. I'm like, I beg to differ. The research indicates otherwise. So you can, with a psychopath, you can actually, they're going to be psychopathic in any environment, but you put them in a place where they don't have any other avenues to get their thrills. I mean, most serial killers are, you know, white, wealthy men. They're not, you know, crime typically follows poverty, right? But not serial killing. It's a ball game. Fortunately, it's rare, but it's a different ball game.
Yeah. I mean, that is really fascinating, because it's like, you know, rich white males, who have the means, right, to get away with it, to plan, who are fucking bored, right? We've all seen Hostel, like, you know, like all of those things where they're just like, they need to get that they need to get their fucking kicks, right? And so they're the ones that would make sense that they'd be serial killers. Do you have to be a psychopath to be a serial killer, or there are serial killers who aren't psychopaths?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, the short answer is no. I mean, if you're a sniper in the military, you might have killed a bunch of people, and maybe you do have some remnants of guilt, remorse, and empathy, and you're able to overcome that by the whole phenomenon of like, I'm protecting the nation. That again is a very different way to become a killer, and they are killers. But theoretically, if you are encumbered by guilt or remorse, you feel bad about it, you don't do it again. There is the Jeffrey Dahmer type. He was low on guilt and remorse and empathy. Otherwise he would have killed himself or turned himself in. But he did have some. So you can have some modicum of it. But generally speaking, those who are doing it for reasons that are just selfish and self-serving, most generally speaking, they tend to be high on scales of psychopathy.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, that obviously makes sense as well. I mean, how much of serial killers are what you said earlier, they need it to achieve orgasm, to be aroused. Is that 75% of them, 50%? What would you say?
Well, serial killers who are having sex or raping, I shouldn't say having sex. I mean, I guess technically they are, but those who are raping their victims, I think most typically that has a lot to do with it. So if their victims are being sexually assaulted, I'd say those things are generally tied together. You do have, so, you know, I have serial killers. There's a bunch of serial killers who just enjoy the kill. They love the hunt. They love the feeling of power and taking that life away. They love that. That to them is their, that's their, you know, their drug. And then there are those who are like, this is super sexual. And this is an unpopular thing to say, but unfortunately the research just supports it. Most rape is about sex. It's not about control. I know that there's a narrative that it's just women haters and there's just control, and even incels who rape, it's because they want to have sex. That's a really unpopular truth. And, but it's true for serial killers too. So those who are raping and killing a lot of times, and of course there's a power element to it. Of course, but a lot of times it does come down to sex. And I mean, I remember being on, I think, the Dr. Oz show, and I just got so much hate for that. I'm like, I'm just the messenger. I don't like it either. I also don't like the fact that genes have so much more to do with our personality than we've ever thought, because really you look at parenting and you're like, well, what's the point? As long as I protect you from trauma and make you feel not neglected and loved, like these little nudges that we do that seem so significant to us, the genes are just stronger than that, unfortunately. Now, that's not to say it's not important. I parent the shit out of my children, but you just need to recognize how strong biology is.
Well, I mean, this is a great place to jump into what you said in the beginning. It may have been before we were recording, actually, but like the answer of why, right? Like why, how, mm-hmm. how are serial killers being created, right? And, you know, when they're children is when they usually present, or it's already too mm-hmm. late or whatever. So if you could expound on that, I think people are like, going to be foaming at the mouth to hear what you have to say about like how serial killers are created or born, right? I love that that concept, because people fight about that all the time.
And people hate to look at the studies. They hate to look at research. And that's one thing we were talking about social media. And I'm like, everyone's an expert now. And I don't think you need to have degrees to be an expert, but I do think you need to rely on science. It can't just be your gut or what you've seen, because what we see is what's given to us, what's put out there. That's why serial killers seem like they're so prevalent when they're not. I think it's important to realize that you can have a child who's born callous and unemotional. That's what we call them when they're children and they're showing lack of empathy. Children are pretty unempathetic to begin with, but they do develop empathy over time. And that's their brain working, right? That's written in the stars. But if you look at a pedigree, an actual like a family tree of somebody who's a psychopath, you'll find psychopathy in other generations. Not necessarily their mom or dad, but their great uncle Fred. Let's say he was really psychopathic and killed pets and like would get involved in crime and bank robberies and didn't give a shit about it. You know, it's a constellation of genes that you inherit that kind of dictate whether or not you have these very important human emotions. Now, you can be callous and unemotional and just become the president of the United States of America, and be, your goal could be to do good. You like it. You like the fame, you like the fortune, and you want to be the good guy. I like being the good guy, so I'm going to do good things. Yeah, it might hurt people along the way. I don't care about that. But my goal is pro-social. So what I typically say is, if you see these traits in a child, you can do a few things, like pay really close attention to it and then understand their goals and put them in places where they can achieve those goals without it being criminal. Usually the first step is petty crime, breaking into shit, trespassing, all of drugs, sex. That's usually where a thrill seeker goes first. But if you're an astute parent and you recognize it, there are things that you can do to give them a different outlet, agency over that. Secondly, there are all sorts of homes now, rehabilitative homes for psychopathic children. And I hate the thought of sending a child away, but what it does is, if you don't care about consequences and you don't care about hurting other people, it's really hard to teach you to care. They learn to fake it. They learn to use the language of like, oh, I felt so bad, but they really don't. But what these homes, these professionals teach them is, you're going to get more of what you want out of society if you behave within the rules. And these young, typically boys, eventually get it. It's a very reward-based system. There's no consequences because consequences aren't ineffective. But it can teach them, hey, look, play within the rules, then you can do all of your other dirty stuff on the side as long as you're not hurting people.
I love that idea because that idea is like take that thing inside of you and like, you know, go do something else with it and mm-hmm. find a safer more quiet way to feed it without killing people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that's brilliant, to be honest. And that's incredible to learn that it, you know, this thrill kill idea that basically most of these killers, serial killers are doing it for the thrill. That's like, to me, that's mind blowing. And I'm so glad you're here for the special. Cause like, come on. I mean, where else would we hear that? Okay. So what inspired you to do this work? And was there a certain serial killer or series of murders? Was it something unsolved? I mean, how did you wind up as talented and prolific as you are? Where did it start?
Well, thank you. I don't know about that. I am also a thrill seeker. I'm the most empathetic chick around. So I'm very high in empathy, remorse, and guilt, but I'm very low on autonomic arousal. Like it takes a lot. I get bored. I sit down, I fall asleep. So I needed to study something interesting and cool. And I ended up looking into the biology of crime. Everybody was studying the environment. I'm like, well, if it's all environment, how come every, you know, horribly abused child doesn't become criminal? So I started in that trajectory, but I grew up here in LA, and one of my sister's friends was attacked by the Night Stalker when I was really, really little and survived and thrived. I mean, she's amazing. So I think I kind of had a fascination about serial killers from a young age. Anybody who can do something that's just so out of ordinary, like it's just so bizarre. I'm fascinated by things that are just weird. And I wanted to understand why. I mean, I was just so sick of people talking about bad parenting. And I'm like, that can't be it. Because there are people growing up in orphanages. Like, there's protective factors and there's risk factors. And I was like, well, the biology is more complicated, but I've got time. So I'm going to dive in. And that's
yeah.
what brought me to it.
Oh my God, what a fuck. I can't wait to have you back for a full episode. This is like gorgeous, fucking awesome shit. And I just like that origin story is one of the best ones that I've ever heard on the show. And I ask everyone's, I'm not saying that theirs are boring or anything, but that what you just told me is incredible. And to seek it out and to search it out and want to understand and know that much about yourself, like that speaks a lot about what kind of a person you are. And no wonder your work is so great. I mean, come on, right?
Well, you have to have a sense of humor if you work in this freaking industry.
I bet. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
It's dark.
Yeah. And I would imagine like you gotta find the jokes, man, or you're gonna fucking lose it, you know?
Oh, you'll slit your wrist the long way. It's so dark, especially when it comes to children. Like, and one thing about, I mean, people do kill people. Typically, it's somebody you know. Typically, it's in your own house. It's an important subject. You know, and children, if you can see it and catch it early, like we have an obligation. But my experience has been that people love the story. They don't really love giving an excuse to the killer. They don't want it to be something out of their control. And so it's kind of become my life's work now to be like, we don't like it. But now that the science is out, it's incumbent upon us to do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, and people, like, again, like they just don't want to believe. I don't think that their little bastard kid could, like, you know, fucking shoot up a school or murder the mm-hmm. nanny or push someone down the stairs or whatever. And if it's preventable, I just feel like you gotta. I mean, I'm not a parent, and I don't plan on ever being one. Mm-hmm. But But like, come on, if we can prevent
this. You just don't
know
if you're a parent, really, do you?
I've been very, very safe.
That's good.
Yeah, no, there's a level of paranoia that comes along, at least with me, when you're throwing parties for a living and you're hosting a sex podcast, it's like, we got, you know, so I've always been, but you never know. I could be cloned. There could be like a little clone of me running around out there somewhere. Many blackouts that I can't explain. Because when we're talking about kids, I think the narrative that we've been fed, like through Dexter and through Jeffrey Dahmer, is that in order for your kid to be a serial killer, he has to be bringing home like dead squirrels and like fucking whatever. And that just seems like so extreme, but yet like, no, he doesn't. He could be like beating up his sister in a way that's
right. He doesn't care. He could be laughing when his mom slices her finger cooking and he thinks it's funny. There's a lot of things that you see, you know, and the brilliance of a psychopathic child is they just don't know that they're they don't know they're different. They don't know. It's like explaining a color to a blind person. You can tell, like, so we had the Southern California Twin Project where we had identical and fraternal twins between ages of 9 and 11. And you, every once in a while, you get a little psychopathic one, and talking to them is fascinating because they have no idea what you're talking about when you talk to them about feeling bad or feeling guilty. It's an emotion they've never felt. You can't explain it to them so they learn to fake it. They learn to talk about like, oh gosh, I was just so sad when my cat died. Oh, I felt so bad for my sister. They're making that shit up. They have no idea. Like, wow. Imagine explaining the concept of funny to someone who's never, to a Martian, just to an alien. Like, something's funny, it makes you laugh. Let's laugh. Like, how would you explain that concept? You can't. And it's the same with explaining empathy to somebody who lacks it completely. They'll learn, and Cleckley, I believe it was Cleckley that said this in 1956, they learn the language of the emotion they don't have, but they never learn the music of the emotion. They never know what it really feels like. They just learn to copy what we say about that emotion.
Yeah, wow. But so are they looking around confused at everyone else? Because everyone else is okay. Confused. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Why are you upset? They can be upset if they're about to suffer some consequence that's meaningful to them, like you're going to take away whatever their goal is, or they can be upset about themselves. They cannot understand this being upset about someone else's misfortune.
Wow. Yeah. That's insane. Literally. But like fascinating nonetheless that they wouldn't know what that felt like. And they would be, you know, kind of like feeling like an alien and feeling alienated, but maybe not feeling anything. I don't know. So
all of their emotions are blunted to a degree. They don't really experience anything like we do. Like I said, that's why they're thrill seeking all the time. But that one is just one they really just don't have. And it's, you know, it's when I talk to them, it's, you know, when I can get them to stop faking it and actually like, they're like, why the fuck do I care? I mean, I had this guy say to me, he's like, I just killed my entire family. You think I care about my dog? And because he killed his dog too. And I'm like, but you fed that damn dog for its entire life. And he's like, yeah, but I didn't care.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, nobody hates it. Like in prison, you can kill your kids, you can kill your wife, your mom, you kill your dog, and they're going to get you.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, that's not a popular one.
Yeah.
You mentioned that your friend, I think, was it? She survived the Night Stalker in California.
Sister's friend, yeah.
Your sister's friend. So was that case, because that was kind of he was like breaking into people's houses and masturbating and then killing all sorts of shit, like
horrifying things.
Yeah, I mean, the documentary alone is really well done, but like fucking terrifying. Mm-hmm. Was that a case that you became fascinated with early on? Did you study that case?
I mean, it's been studied ad nauseum. Sure, I just covered it over a 6-episode arc in Mind of a Monster. Season 2, we covered it. We did, no, I'm sorry, season 1. We did serial killers that were killing at the same time in the same city. Mm. And there's a few of them, and they're fascinating just looking at their overlaps. And if you have 2 serial killers at the same time, you get away with a lot more. But he's unique. He's one of the most evil, most awful of the serial killers. People like to talk about this event in his life, which I'm sure was traumatizing. They talk about his cousin came home from war and in front of Richard Ramirez killed his own wife. And I'm like, yes, there's trauma there, but you guys are missing a much more important fact. Two relatives who are both murderers, like genes, like we can't ignore the biology, you know, that and the trauma of seeing somebody being killed right in front of you. But he's not the first person to see somebody be killed right in front of him. So, you know, it's usually a combination. You have a predisposition, a biological or genetic, and those can be different things. You can have a biological predisposition, like a brain injury, and now your brain's different, you know, whether it's birth trauma or what, or a genetic predisposition toward crime, and then a triggering event. That's very, very common. But he's just one of those where there were no boundaries with him. There was nothing he wouldn't do, nobody he wouldn't kill. And he had to get grosser and weirder just to kind of achieve it. And yeah, he's a special kind of fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why I asked, because even just watching the documentary is like, holy fucking shit. I mean, and again, the way they did it was incredible. Are there cases what are the cases that just fascinate you? I mean, is there unsolved stuff out there that you just can't pull away from, or is it, do you find that you're like, I need a break from this? It's a lot. You won't hear me commenting a lot about cases that have just happened. It's too raw for me. I get too upset about it. And also I don't have enough about the murderer to really contribute. I'm so sick of hearing people talk about the same crime over and over again. I'm like, but give me an angle, give me something I can learn from this. So if I don't have something to offer about a crime, I keep my mouth shut. And the ones that fascinate, I think, me the most are the ones where I can't figure out why. It just, you know, it's like you look at all these moms now that are killing their kids. And I can tell you that's postpartum psychosis. I can tell you exactly what's going on in their brains. Of course, nobody talks about it, but I'm happy to. But there are some where I'm just like, huh. I don't get it. And I tend to ignore those because I will spend my life just, you know, kind of spiraling. And I let other people give me more information. And then I'm like, okay, now I get it. but you know, like that guy, the Idaho killings recently, I'm like, people were so fascinated by, oh, he's looked up how to kill people before. I'm like, cause he's studying that in school. Like, you should see my web history. I mean, that will be frightening. yeah. So for me, it's the ones where I'm like, you don't have any criminal risk factors whatsoever. What the hell happened here? Yeah, no, that's incredibly fascinating. Are there any, old cold cases, like some of the classics like Zodiac or the Dahlia or anything that you have theories on or that fascinate you? Or are you just kind of like over those that have been kind of talked to death?
Yeah, I tend to stay away from those that have been covered just because there's, you know, there's too many pundits. There's too many people talking about it. I lived in Colorado right around the time JonBenet was killed. I have some theories about that. You know, it's a lot of cases go unsolved. Oh God, there was one recently that, you know what fascinates me is that guy who hijacked a plane and then jumped out of it.
D.B. Cooper.
Yes, D.B. Yeah. And that's not even his name. No. I love that case because I'm like, what a badass, right? Like, nobody got hurt. It wasn't very much money.
No.
Like, you're awesome. He probably died. You know, he probably didn't survive that landing. But that recently has kind of caught my eye, but a lot of the played out ones, they're just played out and I'm over them.
So, in closing, cause it looks like we're almost out of time with you, with the special, although you will be back, for a full episode. So there's a tease there. In closing, what do you want to give a theory on JonBenet? Cause I think they're scratching at the phone right now, trying to make sure I don't let you go without asking that.
I think it was most definitely somebody in her family. You know, there's a lot of questions surrounding her brother. You know, and I know somebody who showed up at his doorstep and he opened the door with a shotgun. I don't want to say too much because these people are still alive. I don't think her mother had anything to do with it. But I suspect it was somebody in her family or somebody who was very close to her family.
Wow.
And I'll leave it there. I think if it happened today, we'd have answers.
Yeah. So JonBenet, so JonBenet is not Katy Perry. We can lay that one to rest, right?
Right. We can lay that one to rest, right?
Oh my God. Well, happy Halloween, Dr. Michelle Ward. Thank you so much for doing this. I look forward to bringing you back for a full episode of Sex Party. You mentioned that you hung out at the Playboy Mansion for the Halloween parties. Those are legendary. We're going to get into all sorts of stuff in a full episode soon. But let us remind. Let's tell these spooky, sexy people where they can find you, where they can find your work, your podcast.
Yes. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find How Not to Raise a Serial Killer. I've got a lot of leverage on that one because I own it. So I say a lot of things that I can't say in the more scripted formats. And then that one's won awards. And then a big award-winning one is Mind of a Monster. I don't take any credit for those awards it's won because that is the incredible producers on that show. But we have access to people. We come closer to answers in those cases, and we get real with those. But that you can also find anywhere, any place you get your podcasts. But thank you.
Thanks. Amazing. Yeah, of course. I think you're brilliant. I can't wait to come back. But until then, happy Halloween.
Thank you.
Talk soon.
That's an official wrap on Body Count, the 2023 Sex Party Halloween special. Big, huge thank you to all of my guests, Dr. Victoria Hartman, Desiree Simone, and Dr. Michelle Ward. Sex Party returns to its normal time slot every single Wednesday with a brand new episode. If you're listening on platforms like Apple and Spotify, subscribe to the show so you never miss a new episode. You could also leave a rating. You could also leave a review if you feel so inclined. If you're watching on YouTube, I see you and I'm going to gut you like a fish unless you subscribe. You could also like this video. You could leave a comment on this video, on all the videos. You can catch me in the DMs on Instagram. I'll see you back here next week. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Click subscribe and don't make this a regular thing.